Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Produce Buzzers Podcast. We are so happy you have joined us today, and I think you will be too after the show is over, because you will learn a lot about fresh fruits and vegetables, how to select and store them, how to prepare and cook them, and surprising facts about their history and origin. We hope it inspires you to eat more fresh fruits and vegetables, not only for your health, but also for your delight and pleasure as you explore their amazing world of taste and delicious flavors. Eating more of them will transform your life in so many positive ways. So settle back, relax, and get ready for another delicious adventure with the Produce Buzzers. Greetings, Produce Buzzers podcast fans. Welcome to another episode of the Produce Buzzers podcast. I'm your host, Edwin Stepp, executive editor of producebuzz.com. And as usual, I'm joined by Teresa Nolan, the president and founder of Produce Buzz, along with Rick Stepp and Cynthia Benedetto, both contributing editors to Produce Buzz. In keeping with our penchant for nepotism, we have another relative on our podcast today. This guest is first cousin to Teresa, Rick, and me, but unlike the three of us, he did not abandon our family's long history of farming. He has kept the tradition up, but in a way none of us many years ago would have thought the tradition would evolve into. Farming in the region we grew up and went through some very hard times in the 1970s and 80s, and many family farms went out of business. But our cousin did not abandon his deep love for working the land and found a way to adapt and survive. And not only to survive, but thrive and become one of the most successful agrotourism farms in the nation. Please welcome Mike Stepp, the owner of Stepp's Hillcrest Orchard in Western North Carolina. Thanks, Mike, for joining us.
Thank you, Edwin.
Great to have you. It's been a while since we've seen you. I came out to the farm last summer, or was it 2020? Was it 2020 I came out and saw you, so that was fun. Anyway, well, Mike and his family have been inviting guests to pick their own apples on their 70-acre working farm and apple orchard for nearly 50 years. His father worked the farm for many years before him, before Mike took over, and now Mike's children and his grandchildren are joining in. Three generations are now working the farm. We all grew up in the mountains of Western North Carolina, a little crosswords known as Dana. The center of Dana sits right on the Eastern Continental Divide. It had a post office, a fire department, a church, of course. The rain that fell on the roof of one side of that church flowed into the Atlantic Ocean, and the rain that fell on the other side of the church flowed to the Gulf of Mexico. Across the street from the church was our grandfather's general store with a big sign that said J.H. Stepp and Sons. Those sons included our father, Teresa Ricks, and mine, whose name was Leon, and Mike's father, who was J.H. Stepp Jr. Both of our fathers were farmers, and our father owned a packing house to pack and ship not only our farm products, but the products of farms from all around the region. Mike, Rick, and I, and Teresa all worked in that packing house one time or the other. But Mike's father focused on growing apples along with many other vegetables like cabbage and beans. But as the economy of farming changed in Western North Carolina, those crops became harder and harder to sustain. So Mike and his father had the foresight to get on the ground floor of the soon-to-boom agrotourism industry. Western North Carolina was already a hot tourist destination, especially when the autumn weather changes the Blue Ridge Mountains into a beautiful vista of red, orange, yellow, and fading green. They decided then to open up their farm to the public to come in and enjoy the wonderful experience of picking their own apples. It soon became one of the top tourist destinations in North Carolina. And just this past year, it was given a special honor by the website Yelp. The orchard was named one of the country's 20 best places to pick apples after Yelp said it identified the top spots to go apple picking in Canada and the U.S. Then analysts looked at several factors, including ratings and numbers of reviews from 2001 to 2021, and Mike's Steps Hillcrest Orchard was in the top 20. But I'm talking too much. It's time to hear from our guest today. Mike, thanks for joining us. Very happy to have you on the podcast. Tell us more about the history of your farm and your experience farming it.
Thank you, Edwin. Once again, it's really great to see my cousins, to get to visit with them, to meet Cynthia. We do not get to get together much anymore, so it's a real treat when we do. So thank you for having me today. Yeah. I want to tell you a little bit about the history. You've given quite a good lead in there, but just to kind of get back to how we got started and where we are right now today. My dad and mom did buy the original 70-acre farm in 1963. And my dad began fairly soon after that to take out some of the old orchard that was here and to put in some of the new orchard. They also began to experiment early on with the pick your own. It had a very humble, small beginning, but it showed promise from the very start. And by 1969, I would say it was definitely an integral part of our business.
Okay, so much earlier than I remembered. That's good to know. I was thinking it was later than that, but that's interesting.
Yes, actually, we kind of look at 1969 as our beginning, our where we can really decide that was where we were doing pick your own as a real part of our farm. And actually through the 70s, 80s, and most of the 90s, what we were doing didn't change a lot, but our customer base was expanding all the time. We did about the same thing we had always done, but we were really getting to become a destination, which is really good for the business. And actually by the end of the 90s, my dad, he was approaching 80 years old. He wanted to cut down on some of the other orchard that we had. So we transitioned that whole period. We were actually transitioning and we were only doing our pick your own apples by the end of the 90s and a small grape vineyard that was basically his hobby. He was taking care of that, and we were letting people cut their own grapes and pick their own apples. By 2003, we made a big change when we started doing school tours, educational school tours for school children. And we offered pumpkins. We began to grow pumpkins. And we also did weekend wagon rides, which was, you know, it turned out to be really a good thing. It really brought more people in. It expanded our customer base. And again, you know, we were getting our product out there and people were knowing us.
Yeah.
So after that 2003 change, we stayed still quite a bit with what we were doing. But by 2015, we made a big change, further diversified by adding a 5-acre corn maze. We started to make our own apple cider donuts and we put in a couple of apple cannons.
Wait,
I need to explain a little bit about what an apple cannon is. It's It looks about like a cannon. A farmer, a grower, and he's in Michigan, and I assume he had some design help, but he came up with what they call an apple cannon. It uses compressed air to shoot the small apples. If you recall, back in the packing days, we called those peewees, very small apples, and people shoot those at targets. Great fun. A great avenue to use those peewees.
Right. So yeah, because we could do nothing with those. We just had to call those, didn't we, or throw them in the – did they even go to juice? They were probably too small for juice, weren't they?
They could go to juice, yes. But this is something that's really worked out great, and it's amazing how many people now, even in our area, have started to, you know, put in the cannons. Several of the other farms that have put them in since we did. So
yeah, you're going to start a war ones. Over there with these apple cannons. I hope you don't shoot at your competitors.
That's true. That's true.
Is there a berm behind it? What kind of?
No, you shoot at targets, right?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, but what targets. If you don't make the target and it goes shooting past the target?
Have some golf netting that they use like at golf ranges.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So we've had to install that, but it does a good job. And we regulate, you know, we can regulate the height and the side motion of it. And we actually can adjust the volume, the velocity of how fast the apples come out. So we've, right. you know, we've got a lot of adjustments that we could make on that to keep it where we want to.
So what so, powers anyway, it? What is what, it's not gunpowder, I hope.
No, it's compressed air.
Compressed air. Okay.
Compressed air. We use a compressor and a large storage tank. And yeah. so it draws off of that. But it's a really neat thing. And it's amazing the people that really enjoy doing that. I mean, we see whole families participate in that activity. So
yeah,
it's really nice.
How fast does that thing come out of? Is it catapulted?
You know, I don't know that I know that exactly. I know the pressure we keep it at, so I'm going to guess a little bit as far as velocity. But I'd say it comes out of there at least 70 miles an hour and maybe more. I mean, it moves on.
Wow.
And those little apples, do they demolish when they hit the target, or do they – that must be
yes,
part of the thing, seeing them just blow up, right?
They demolish, and people love to hear them splat. So that kind of brings us up to 2015. And again, you know, our customer base is continuing to expand. And we had, by that time, we had become a destination. We're not, you know, on a major highway, but we're not far off of a major highway. But with Google Maps, with all the GPS things that go on, you know, people can find us. So fast forward to 2019, we were blessed to be able to purchase 35 acres of property that joins our farm. So now we're 105 acres in one contiguous block.
Okay.
So that's really nice. There was
nearly unheard of, right?
Yes, definitely. And it was just a blessing that we could get it, because there's so much of property around here that goes for homes anymore. And, you know, we understand people have to have a place to live, but, you know, we do like to maintain family farms as much as we can. And this has opened up some avenues for us. It's actually part of the property that my dad used to take care of. It had some old orchard on it, had about 20 acres of orchard, and the rest was in forest. So we logged that forest land off in 2019 and put a cover crop on it to help, you know, get the land in good shape. We took out about 12 acres of the 20 acres in orchards. So we've added about, we've got 8 there, but we're only using about 3 of that. And one of my friends that was managing that orchard at the time, I've got a deal worked with him that he's going to continue to manage that 5 acres that's in kind of a block by itself. Works out good for us, but we've got the 3 acres. It gives us a little bit more variety, choice of variety for our farm. And it has opened up some open ground for us for flower production and more pumpkin production. We began in 2019 to grow sunflowers, so for cut your own flowers. We've also put in zinnias. And then for this year in 2022, we're going to have, if they come up and do well, a crop of tulips.
Wow.
So, you know, the flower thing is right now what we're concentrating on, and we're excited about that and really amazed at how much people enjoy walking through a field of sunflowers and cutting their own flowers. It's really neat.
Is this a relatively new thing? I mean, I think I didn't realize you grew sunflowers until I visited you in summer of 2020,
yeah,
but
well,
or fall of 2020. But
it's new for our area.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it's been in other areas, but we are part of a group here in North Carolina. It's called the North Carolina Agritourism Networking Association.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, we have annual meetings. Rita's worked on that board for a few years. Our older daughter, Danielle's on that board right now. And, you know, we have meetings, we have farm tours, and we can network and find out what other people are doing. So, you know, that's going on in other places, but it's fairly new here, but there are a few growers beginning to put in sunflowers.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, those flowers, they don't all come in at the same time, right? You've got it in different times.
No, we space out the flowers, to where we'll have a crop pretty much they're planted so that they coincide with our apples.
Yeah, that was my question. Do they come in the summer when you're typically closed? You don't open until the apple season begins, right?
Correct. The tulips will be a spring venture if that pans out. And we're always looking to expand our, you know, our business time.
Right.
We're about a 12-week business right now, you know, 1st of August through October. And we'd like to expand that business a little bit on either side of that time frame would be great.
Yeah, so that was the heart of my question was I wondered if you were going to start expanding the seasons.
Are the tulips going to coincide with when the wildflowers come up in the Carolinas?
It's a good question, Cynthia. I don't really know. Actually, our daughter Danielle and her husband are kind of in charge of the tulips.
Because they're just so delicate. And that's what, you know, they're not like sunflowers. But so before it gets hot, that must be like just something fabulous to see.
I think it'll be beautiful. We planted about somewhere nearly around 15,000 tulips, which is not a lot. It's not a big area, but it's, you know, that should make a beautiful scene when those tulips bloom. So it's just an experiment. We'll see how it goes, but we're looking forward to that.
And those are they perennials, tulips, or are they, you have to replant every year?
I think you do have to do some replanting. And again, I'm not totally sure on that, but I'm pretty sure you do. Yes.
Right. I think tulips do come up every year, but you may have to redo some of them because sometimes critters get in there and eat the bulbs and things like that.
You're right, Teresa. I remember years ago, Rita had a few and they did kind of come up on a volunteer basis. But the research that Danielle and Rex have done on that, and they have planted many different varieties, a lot of different colors. And I think some of those, you know, they're going to come back in different ways. So we'll kind of see how that goes. But it's definitely a learning experience. So we'll see how that goes. That kind of brings us up to what we're, you know, where we're at right now, blessed with this other property that we've got, able to expand all of our operation. In the early 2000s, we became acquainted with that word agritourism. It's kind of interesting. I was thinking this morning before this podcast, I thought, you know, I'm going to write down what my definition is of agritourism. And so I'm going to read this to you.
Oh, fantastic. That's great.
This is my definition. Agritourism is the combination of agriculture and tourism whereby farmers invite visitors to their farm to enjoy the experience of a working farm and to support the business. And I think that sums up pretty much what it is. And I think it's very interesting in that my mom and dad were doing agritourism and the word hadn't even been coined.
Yeah, you guys were way ahead of the curve on it.
That's true.
It is a relatively new term. I can't remember when I first heard it. But anyway, that's interesting. Okay, I'm calling up Merriam-Webster after we get off to say you've got a submission for the dictionary, because that's a great definition.
You know, it's when I was in Traveler's Rest, one day we went and picked blueberries. And I'm telling you, after that, I promise I would never complain about the prices of blueberries ever. That is just like the most labor-intensive, painstakingly slow process. Newfound respect for the blueberry in general.
Apples definitely mount up a lot quicker in a box than blueberries do.
What kind of varieties do you have of the apples?
Yeah, great question.
Well, we have got we've got about 23 different varieties. And when you start speaking about varieties, we have got, we've got several varieties that we actually have more than one strain of that particular variety. And what that notes is a strain. It's just a variation of that same apple. It might come in earlier or later, have some different characteristics than maybe the other one. But I was thinking about several that we had. We have two strains of Rome apple that come in at different times, and one gets red color better than the other one. Fuji's an apple that most people are familiar with. We have a, a Fuji that comes in early called Daybreak. We have a Fuji that comes in late called Autumn Rose. And they have similar tastes, but they are different and they come in at different times. We have a golden that is, the name of it is Gibson Golden. It's like a real old golden delicious. It's very similar to a, when you start thinking about golden delicious from years ago, 60s, back in 50s, 60s, this Gibson Golden has quite a bit of characteristic, very close to what the old timey golden delicious had. And then we've got one called Ultra Gold. It's a type of golden delicious. We've got a Blushing Gold, and I really consider it maybe in its own variety. It's quite different, but it is a yellow colored apple, a very sweet tart apple, got a very distinctive taste and comes in at different times. So at any rate,
and it must blush, huh? Does it get a little red or something? Is that what
it does? It's got a little pink blush on it. Yeah. Gets a little redder as the season goes on. Very distinctive looking apple, and it's really a good apple. It's our younger daughter's favorite apple. So that's kind of a neat apple for us. So anyway, Cynthia, 23 different varieties basically.
Do they all come in at the same time?
No. We start.
You might have mentioned that. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't. But that's our season again. Runs from 1st of August through October, and we have apples that come online really all the way through the growing season, the harvest season, I should say. Ginger Gold is our first apple that comes in, along with Gala very soon thereafter. And then the others come in, you know, through September, October apples, Granny Smith, Pink Lady, Arkansas Black. It's a 3-month period, all coming in at different times.
And then they're all harvested within those 3 months?
Yes, that is the aim. So we hope that happens.
You still grow, does anyone grow a red gold anymore?
Have not thought about a red gold in ages, Rick. That was a great apple. Did you like that apple?
I did. I loved it. It was
a
combination of red and golden delicious, I think. I may be wrong.
I think that's right. I have not thought about red gold in years, and I don't know anyone that has any, but that was a very good apple.
Yeah.
We are so blessed that we have all these young people that come that just want to pick an apple. They want to get outside and go to a working farm, and they're not so particular about, you know, the particular apple they get. Some of them do want particular apples, but a lot just want the experience of picking an apple. And it's really rewarding to see these people enjoy that. And the children, you know, get to pick their own and get outside of the city. It's neat.
Mike, have you ever discovered any of your own varieties there? The Braeburn was a New Zealand apple that was a sport, they call it, where it just naturally occurred on the limb of another tree. They found it was a great variety. People loved it. Have you ever had anything like that occur in your orchard where something just pops up and you weren't expecting it?
Well, that's interesting. Years ago, we had a block of goldens, and on one of those trees, we noticed a limb that did come out, and I would consider that a sport. The sad thing is we never did really do anything about it, but we used to call it, my mother used to call it a rusty coat, and we called them rusty goldens, but it was a golden that was completely, totally encompassed in rust, or in other words, russet. Yeah. As a more correct name would be. Goldens, some of the golden varieties have a russet on them. Doesn't hurt the taste, doesn't really hurt the appearance, but it's not really a real slick looking golden. And we never did anything about that, but that was an apple that we might could have actually patented. I don't know, but we did. Yeah. Sadly, yeah. So.
Now, wait a minute. So two questions. Are y'all saying spore or sport?
Sport.
Okay.
With a T on the end.
Okay. And when you say russet, is that something that is like it makes it matte almost and has like a little bit of a texture?
It does have a little bit of a texture. It's kind of a tan in appearance. Normally speaking, Cynthia, you'll see just a small amount of that on a golden. And actually, it's interesting. For many years, our goldens have been pretty much russet free. I used to think it's pretty much a weather condition. I think out in Washington State, the more arid areas of the country, they have less of it. We have quite a bit of moisture here, and it contributes to that russet. But normally speaking, in a normal year, you will have a small amount of it. But again, and it's a little bit rough, very lightly rough to the touch. I mean, I don't even know that you can actually feel it, but you can see it.
So is it like the, you know how a Bosc pear is a little bit, it's not rough, but it's definitely
a little rough.
It's the same.
Yeah. So it's the same thing. Okay. That's what I wanted to know.
Very similar.
Yeah. Yeah. And that rusty apple, the rusty coat, as my mom called it, it was rough to the touch, but it was easy to eat. I think it made me think a little bit of the appearance of a pear, to be honest. Now, it was not shaped like a pear, but it had the appearance of that for the flesh. So interesting. Good question, Teresa. I hadn't thought about that apple in a long time.
I want to go back to the variety question, because you said we might have been able to patent that. And I think for our listeners, probably a lot of them don't understand the industry behind apple varieties and how profitable it can be. You mentioned you grow pink ladies. I go to some of the produce trade shows. The people who develop the pink lady always have one of the biggest booths at these trade shows trying to promote that variety. Because why? How can they make money from developing a variety, Mike?
And we'll use this example that Teresa's asked about, that particular apple and the patent and whatnot. If we had taken that apple, and I know it came back true, and Teresa, that was something, you know, that would have to happen for that sport to remain true, or that mutation, it is a mutation, it would have to come back true. And I know it came back true several years. At some point, we took those old trees out, is why that tree got eradicated from the orchard, and we never did do anything with it. But what we could have done, Edwin, we could have taken buds, taken a short limb, if you will, maybe a 6-inch limb that had several buds on it, and that could have been grafted to a root, and that could have been planted. And if that came back true, having the same apple that we found as calling a sport or mutation on that tree, then we would have a new apple.
Right.
That apple could then be named and patented by us, because we were the finders of it.
Yeah.
You'll see that in nurseries. You'll see that around the country. You'll hear of a grower that's done just like what Teresa has talked about. They found that sport out there, and they've taken it to a nursery and let that nursery work with it, or they've worked it there, you know, themselves. And so, you know, you come up with a marketable apple that you can actually put out there.
Yeah.
And which leads into something that probably we want to talk about at some point is the propagation of some of these new apples and how that's taken place.
Yeah, I think our listeners would be very interested in that.
Okay.
You know, one thing I wanted to interject, I live in Minnesota, as you all know, and the University of Minnesota is the developer of the Honeycrisp, which I know Mike has some Honeycrisp. And they had made multiple millions of dollars off of their patents. Their newest varieties, they're actually getting a commission off of the sales. You don't just buy the trees. You have to send in a quote unquote tax, I guess you would call it, based on how many bushels you sell. But do you have any varieties like that, Mike, that you have to actually send a fee back to the developer of the product?
We started, I guess, in 2019. I think I'd have to look at my notes, but we planted two new apple varieties called the new to us, Ludicrisp and Evercrisp. Those are considered club apples. So we had to join the club to be able to buy those apple trees from the nursery. And we pay a yearly fee to the club. And we will be paying for several years, we'll be paying, it's like a royalty on those. I'm thinking, Rick, I'd have to look to be sure, but I'm thinking that it's actually a set fee, because of what we do on retail. We won't be sending apples through a packing house where you could monitor it that way. But at any rate, yes, you're right. They will get a royalty from that. and we do pay a yearly fee to join the club. So, and we're looking forward to seeing what those two apples will do. This will be their first year that we're going to let them bear, and we'll see what kind of an apple that they make.
Yeah, so tell us more about the propagation. I think our listeners would really like to understand that.
Rick was talking about the University of Minnesota. You've got all the universities, I imagine, or at least in apple growing regions. We got universities that do continual research on new varieties. You've got nurseries and associations that grow apples. When you're trying to get a new apple developed from seed, if you will, you know, they use pollination to keep getting apples that they can plant and grow and see if they have the right characteristics that they want. If they're trying to cross certain varieties with other varieties, and they come out, and if they can find a one that will come back true. In other words, it retains those characteristics that they're trying to breed into that particular variety. Then they will use the grafting method and graft those small limbs onto roots, grow them in the nursery. And then, you know, you've got that apple, then it's they will come back true every year when they're grafted in there. So, and that's the way we buy them from the nursery. We buy grafted trees. They graft that tree onto that root. They grow it in the nursery, and then they'll sell it to growers. And you've got some growers that have their own nurseries. You know, they do their own grafting. We don't do that, but we buy from several different nurseries, and you know, those different apples are out there. We can go in, look at them online, see if it's something that we want.
Let me ask about the seeds. Am I correct to understand that if you pull a seed out of an apple you bought at the grocery store and put it in, tried to sprout it, it would not necessarily produce the same variety? Is that true?
That is true. That is true. It will not. Coming back true with an apple variety has got to be done in the asexual type propagation, the grafting method.
Yeah.
You know.
Got it. So yeah, when you purchase these trees from the nursery or club, you plant it, how long does it take for the tree to bear fruit?
That's a question that can best be answered by how quick you want them to bear, in one respect, and I'll explain why. Years ago, when we had very few different type rootstocks, we had basically what's referred to as a standard rootstock. It made a large tree. And then through the years, when research was done, they began to come out with some more dwarfing rootstocks. Those dwarfing rootstocks will usually produce you can get production, apple production, much quicker than the old standard size. What used to be, say, a 4 or 5 year period before you had much in the way of production, that can come down to 3. It can come down to 2. Some of the real dwarfing rootstocks, and really how hard you push them, there are some growth regulators that help grow a tree and help it to produce fruit buds, and they can be gotten into production a lot sooner than just if you go out there and plant a tree and leave it to itself. So with some very intense cultural practices, you can get a tree bearing. I know a grower friend of mine that's really into that. He has fruit the second year. Hmm. And that's and a good production.
Are all of your trees, do they look like an apple orchard, or do you grow any of them like with the vineyard type techniques?
Trellising is what you're thinking of.
Thank you for that word.
We don't grow any on trellis. Years ago, my dad, when he started planning for Pick Your Own, we had trees about 10 feet apart within a row, and the rows were about 20 feet apart. In the last about 7 or 8 years, we have cut that spacing into half, 5 feet apart in the row, and we've tightened up our rows to about 17 feet. That made us purchase some narrower equipment to get through the orchard because it's tighter than it was. Actually, Cynthia, with what we do on Pick Your Own, I like to have a little bit of space between trees that people can walk through the trees. They're a little bit easier to take care of. You don't have the initial expense of all the trellis work. So for pick your own, I think our system works good. I really like it. It's just that we've tightened up our rows so that we have more trees per acre and we keep those trees more compact. Years ago, my dad used to put out ladders for people to climb. We don't do that anymore. And I think you know why.
Right. The trees are smaller too, right? When you say dwarf rootstock, that means they don't get as high, or does that not have anything?
Correct. They don't grow as tall. They don't grow as wide.
Right.
And you can actually, by the way you plant those trees in relation to where they've been grafted, you can, and I'll use the word throttle or use the term throttle down. You can throttle down that growth by the depth that you plant that tree.
Oh, interesting.
There's a lot of things that growers have learned in the last 20 years. I mean, in the last few years that can really make a difference in your production and how you can harvest those trees. So we plant our trees with the graft basically as high out of the ground as we can get it. That tends to add to the dwarfing characteristic of the tree.
Yeah, interesting. Now, I suppose the people coming to your farm would rather pick from something that looks like what they know is an apple tree than off of a vine.
That's I think that's true, and ours do look like apple trees. They just look like smaller apple trees.
Right, right. Teresa, I interrupted. But
that's okay. When you were talking, Edwin, about the seeds of the apple, humans have 23 chromosomes. Apples can have as many as 85 chromosomes.
Oh, wow.
And that is why when you plant the seed, you might get something entirely different.
Yeah. So. Teresa knows a lot about apples, not just from growing up, but she worked a long time with the New Zealand apple growers, promoting all their varieties. So she got to go down and visit them in New Zealand. I don't know if you've ever been down there, Mike, to see those trees.
I have not, but that's great to hear that technical stuff there, Teresa. I did not know that.
Did Johnny Appleseed really have seeds that he distributed when he went or made his tour, or is that just an expression?
As far as I know, he was an actual person, and that's actually what he did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they were just country apples. I mean, you never know what you're going to get, but you could at least eat them. I mean, you maybe couldn't use them commercially, but for your own tree in your backyard as a source of fruit, I guess it was a.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. If you recall years ago, Rick, through the 60s, there was an apple that was a Red Delicious, and it was known as, it was a Stark apple developed by Stark Brothers Nursery. And it was known as a single Red Delicious. It had very little color, but it was a great apple. Yeah. It had really good flavor.
What type of irrigation do you use?
Well, we do not have any irrigation, Cynthia. We're very fortunate that we get enough rainfall in our area that we don't really need it. The gentleman that I was talking about, fellow grower early, that does trellis work. Now, he did put in irrigation on his because he has his trees so close together. Where I was telling you that we're about 5 feet by 17 feet, he is 2 feet by 11 feet.
Wow.
He has thousands of trees per acre. And with that intense amount of trees on each acre, he pretty much needs to have irrigation because there's so much water need there with all that root system.
Tell us a little bit more about the other products you sell at the farm, because you're not just selling the apples, you're selling things that are made from apples, like apple cider donuts. What the heck is that?
that has become a very good product for us. We are getting known to have very good donuts. We've got people that come back for our donuts every year.
It sounds delicious. You know, I've never actually eaten one, I'm ashamed to say. I was at the Apple Festival this year, and I was gonna get one, but I'm already too fat, so I thought I'll just drink the apple cider. But
there are several growers that do apple cider donuts now, but they are a real good product. We do buy a mix, but we make our own, you know, and it takes it takes some getting things right to get the right amount of cider in there. And I'm not up on this because I don't make them that much. I don't make it all. Let me take that back. But, you know, you have to let the batter sit for a certain amount of time. And then, you know, you load it into the machine. And so there is something to it. And you can make them to where they turn out pretty good or they're not so good. And ours seem to be pretty good. So we've got some good people that make them. You know, we do apple jelly, got several different types of apple salsa.
Salsa. Oh, there's something new.
Yeah.
I love sauces. I've had mango, pineapple, all these other things, but I never thought about apple salsa.
And Rita, my wife, would be a good one to ask about some of these things, but we do have quite an assortment of different jams, jellies, salsas, that sort of thing.
Right.
Apple pies?
Well, we actually buy apple pies. We don't make our own, but we do have those available.
So. Mrs. Smith's? That's who Teresa bakes pies for. Mrs. Smith bakes pies for Teresa.
No. The thing that was really traditional in our family was apple turnovers, right? Mama Step used to make them, didn't she? Am I inventing that?
Were they turnovers or fried pies?
Fried pies. That's probably what it is.
Yeah, fried pies.
Two different things, I think.
Yeah.
We do buy an apple turnover from the same company that we get our donut mix from.
Yeah.
And they're very good. They do very well. We actually, the local bakery here, and all you guys except Cynthia, I don't think would know this, but McFarland's Bakery.
Yep.
Baker that was here in Hendersonville made fritters for us. They are still in business and they made fritters for us for a long time, but some of those folks have retired now and they don't do that anymore for us, but had several different apple products. And I think that's one thing that we're looking at for future, because we're always looking to diversify and add to our business. We probably need a full blown bakery. That may be something that's coming soon, I hope. Or at least more food products of some type. And so we can hopefully do some of those things like regular homemade pies would be nice.
Yeah. Do you have an online store to sell things?
Pardon?
Do you have an online store so people can buy from you from the online?
No, we don't at this time.
Okay. Too bad.
Yeah.
No, you're not making your own apple cider yet?
No, you know, Teresa, that is a whole nother business, if you will.
Yeah.
But we do buy local, and this grower, he grows as well as makes his own, and he actually makes cider for other people. He has them for he has some in Ingles. Hmm. So he's quite well known for that. Very good product, and we use that in our apple cider donuts, and then we sell that by that gallon or half gallon, and we have little small apple sippers for kids that we could put apple cider in those, and that's a popular item. And you're asking about other things we do, not food items, but we started making having a t-shirt for our farm years ago, and we have really gone after that business. We sell a lot of t-shirts, and we every year or every couple of years, we try to come out with a different design. And we've got folks that really come back and buy those t-shirts. They, you know, they really love our t-shirts. And so that's a good business for us as well.
So spreading the awareness of the Steps Hillcrest Orchard around the world, probably. So tell us a bit about that, because you have gotten some pretty amazing publicity. I know that your farm was featured in a cable television series, and I think when I was there the last time, they were filming for a movie. Tell us about some of that kind of publicity that the farm got.
Yeah, the movie was kind of a neat thing. I think the producer of that enterprise reached out to my wife, Rita, and asked her about coming and talking to us about, possibly shooting a movie here, and we both met with them, and very nice people. I guess it's probably a fairly small production company. I don't know, but we did in 2020. We We had them here on the farm for several weeks, in and out. They filmed some of it in Charlotte. They filmed some here. Not really sure where else, but it was the gist of the story was a farm that was an apple orchard, and they were beginning to wane in their business and having difficulties. And so they had hired a consultant to come in and help them decide how they could, you know, or what they could do to their business to make it more profitable. And the, if it's okay to say this, in the Hallmark type fashion movie, because that's what it is. It was a Hallmark type movie.
Right.
The lady that was the consultant meets up with the guy that's the grandson of the growers, and they actually used our name, the step name, of course. And
really?
Got some good, nice. Yeah, got pictures of our signs and shot some footage outside of our home in our apple house, and kind of neat there. And so this grandson didn't really like the this happening, you know, on his farm, but things came together like a Hallmark movie does, and they hit it off. And the farm,
Who was the actor and actresses?
I really don't know. I'm not sure, Cynthia.
Can we watch it? Is there a way for us to watch it?
Yes, you can. It's called 10 Steps to Love, and you could get it on Roku. I know that. You know, or you you can get it. It's a pretty neat little movie. I think it was, you know, fairly well done. And something, Edwin, that was a kind of a interesting sideline, and I didn't know this till actually after apple season. I didn't have time to watch it before we got through with apples. I watched a small clip of it, but when I watched it through toward the end of the movie, the older couple that had the orchard, of course, their name was Step. They were using the Step name, and they called the gentleman's name. They called him Joe, which was actually, you know, my dad's name. They didn't really anybody call him Joe.
Yeah.
But so
they called our dad Joe.
That's exactly that. Right. I thought about him when they did that. So, but interesting. That was a real neat thing. I know that's helped us with some advertising, and you know, we've had people that have seen it and said something about it. You know, we keep up a Facebook page, and we've got a decent website. Got a good website. I shouldn't say decent. And so some of these things that have given us some notoriety, like being on that best orchards list, you know, and we again network with some of these other associations and get our name out there. And so God's really blessed us to, you know, really move our business to another level.
Yeah.
Last
Mike was the farmer of the year last year, weren't you, Mike? Or was it the year before last you were the farmer of the year?
Well, actually, I had something that happened 2 years in a row, Teresa. In 2020, I was the 2020 apple farmer of the year that's given by a local bank. And I got to speak just a minute at the opening of the apple festival. And then in 2021, I was the Blue Ridge Apple Growers Association Grower of the Year. So I actually got two things back to back, which was kind of neat.
Congratulations. That's fantastic.
That's great.
Thank you.
And then last year, his granddaughter was the apple ambassador. They no longer have apple queens for the apple festival, but she was the apple ambassador.
That's right. Callie McCall, our oldest grandchild, was apple ambassador for 2021. Yeah. So very neat. Very nice. Very nice thing. She's done a good job at that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you were featured. I saw the article in the Chicago Tribune, one of the biggest papers in the country, did an article on basically the Hendersonville apple industry. And Mike was featured in that quite prominently. So,
hey, I've got a good story. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law were flying to Florida, and they connected through the Chicago airport, and someone had a Steps Orchard t-shirt on, and they took a picture of it and texted it to my wife, Lori. And I thought that was pretty cool. And they said, would that be any relation to you?
That's great.
And how did you answer Rick? Did you claim?
I said, yes.
Rick, was that person at the airport?
Yeah, they were They were just walking in the airport randomly, and somebody had a Steps Orchard t-shirt on in the airport, and they took a picture of it.
Well, that's interesting. That's cool to hear, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be seeing a lot more of those t-shirts, I think, around the way you guys are going. So that'll be great. I've got a few of them, too. All my daughters.
Well, good. That's good.
We came to visit you. You may not remember because you were out busy carving the corn maze. But we showed up with my family and we picked some apples and we bought t-shirts and talked to your dad. That's probably the last time I saw your dad, which is unfortunate, but he was doing well then, but getting up there. But we have the t-shirts too.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Well, we've probably taken enough of your time. We're running out of time.
Before we let Mike go, we need to do a homegrown.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay, so Mike, you may not have listened to our podcast, but we have a segment we do every time called Homegrown. Teresa loves puns, but they're always so bad we groan at them. We do one. One related to some sort of fresh fruit or veggie each time. So let me introduce it, and then
You
have to groan after she gives the punchline, Mike. You have to groan with the rest of us because we know it's going to be bad. All right.
I'm excited.
Okay. I'll introduce it. So, Produce Buzzers podcast fans, it's time for your favorite segment on the Produce Buzzers podcast. Okay, we know you hate it, but you got to go through it. You got to endure it because Teresa is going to bring us another one of her puns. Teresa, what is our homegrown today?
Well, why couldn't the apple understand the jokes that the apple juice was telling?
Okay, well, let's see if we can guess this first. So why couldn't the apple understand the jokes that the apple juice was telling, or just the juice was telling? The apple juice was
telling. The apple juice was telling.
Okay. Why couldn't the apple understand the jokes the apple juice was telling? Any guesses, Mike?
No, but I'm confident Teresa is going to tell me.
Rick, come on. You always have a good guess or two.
Oh, boy, that's tough. Let Cynthia go. Maybe I'll think of something.
Cynthia's got nothing. Okay, Teresa, you're going to have to tell us.
Well, the apple couldn't understand the jokes the apple juice was telling because it was an insider joke.
Oh. You had to think about that one.
That's good.
Sorry we subjected you to this, Mike.
That's okay. I was able to groan.
Thanks so much for joining us and being here. And congratulations on all your success.
Well, thank you very much, Edwin. And it's been a real treat for me to get to talk to you guys, see you guys. I just never get to see you. And Cynthia, to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
You were the life of the podcast. I'm glad you were here.
She took it easy on you. You got out easy today, Mike. She usually
really is. Oh, yeah. So blessed.
Well, I didn't want to, like, bust on him about the pumpkin chunking, like, cannonball.
Oh, do you do pumpkin chunking at your farm? You know what pumpkin chunking is?
And we do not do pumpkin chunking. We're just staying with apples on that.
Yes, stick to the apples, Mike. Nobody does them better than you and your family. Keep up the good work, preserving farmland and giving people the opportunity to connect with the farms and the land. Thanks again for joining us. Please take a second before you leave to subscribe and or follow our podcast on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. We are on over 10 different podcast feeds, including YouTube. And if you want to help support this podcast by making a donation, we would be so grateful. Just go to anchor.fm/produce-buzz, and you will see a support button below the podcast description. Click on it. Give what you can. No amount is too small. And, of course, no amount is too large. Thank you, listeners, and good night. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the Produce Buzzers podcast, brought to you by Produce Buzz, the gathering place for lovers of fresh fruits and veggies. We hope you were entertained a bit and educated a lot about fresh produce. Be sure to join us next time, and please tell your friends to do so as well. Like, share, and comment on our Produce Buzz Facebook page, and check out our website at www.producebuzz.com. There you will find articles about fresh fruits and veggies, how to select, store, and prepare them, as well as lots of interesting facts about all the wonderful bounty the earth provides for us. Until next time, be fruitful, and don't forget to veg out.